welcome to Big Nerdy Questions. Welcome back, everyone, to a very special episode. And when I say very special, it's not like the 1980s sitcoms where someone is suddenly on the influence of drugs and Nancy Reagan shows up. No, this is a very special episode because we have guests. We are very excited to introduce Ori, who is going to talk to us about Dragon Fruit, which is the coolest dating app that I have ever heard of. And I would certainly be using it if I were not already married. We'll be hearing from Ori in just a little bit. But since we have a relationship expert on the show, and since we know you love Star Wars, we thought we would put the two together. For tonight's big nerdy question, what relationship lessons can we learn from Star Wars? And no, the answer is not, put your significant other in a slave costume, it'll work out. There are other things.
Maybe for you.
It's okay if you want to, but there are other lessons that we're going to be getting from it. But first, Matt, before we get to our real sponsor, oh my God, we have a real one. Why don't we go ahead and let us acknowledge our traditional sponsor, if you will.
Well, Josh, today's episode is brought to us by The Courtship of Princess Leia by Dave Wolverton. The Courtship of Princess Leia, now featuring the serenade stylings of C-3PO. And yes, it actually happens in the book.
I feel that his voice has golden tones.
Yeah.
I wonder if he records his demos on a droid phone. And it has
two.
Begun! It has begun! Oh, man. So, as you all know, as loyal listeners of the show, we have every week a big nerdy recommendation, and we think it only fair that Ori have a chance to recommend something. So first of all, hello, Ori. Welcome to Big Nerdy Questions.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
And before we get into the details of Dragon Fruit, would you like to recommend something for us today?
You know, now that everything on this episode is going to be, like, romance-themed, I should have come up with something a little bit more romantic to recommend, but never mind. You guys wanted something a little bit weird and obscure and off the beaten path. My recommendation to you is the best movie that I have seen all year, which is called The Train to Busan, which is a Korean zombie movie that is just phenomenal.
That is amazing. Yeah. The Train to Busan, please check that out. It has Ori seal of approval, so you know it's good. Would you say
sounds
Ori,
romantic enough to me.
Is it more in the vein of like a gore zombie, more of a suspense film?
I don't know. It's a very well-balanced film in that it's got a lot of the hallmarks of your traditional, like, Asian horror flick with some of the gore and some of the, you know, the tropes that you would expect. But it has all of the production quality of a big Western blockbuster horror movie.
Wow.
You know, if such things exist. And it maintains all of the familiar tropes, but in a really cool new context that still keeps you guessing and still has you figure out, you know where it's going, of course, but you don't know exactly how it's going to get there. And basically, I mean, it's a group of people trapped on a bullet train from Seoul to Busan. And it's like, it's not like nighttime zombies, it's daytime zombies, and they're, you know, they're fast zombies instead of slow zombies, but essentially the formula is there in a really interesting new way, because everything is characterized not by, you know, being trapped, but by extremely high speed, which I think is a really cool take on a very familiar subject.
Cool. Yeah, it sounds interesting. My favorite Korean train-related film is Snowpiercer, which is, you know, comes out of Korea. It stars Chris Evans, but it was made in South Korea. But yeah, I like Korean train films, so I'll have to check this out. And before we go any further, I was remiss in introducing all the panel. You know Ori now. Matt, of course, officially welcome to the show, as always. And we have Ed again. Thank you, Ed, for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, I believe before we get into our question, I want you, Ori, to introduce Dragon Fruit. What is Dragon Fruit?
Dragon Fruit is the dating app for geeks by geeks. We cater to all your geeky interests and stuff like that. It is the place for all the geeky and nerdy people out there to find new friends and significant others and a little bit of love in the world, because God knows we need it right now. And, yeah, so, It's all based on the idea that people who have similar geeky interests will have a good chance of relating well to one another and communicating well, and knowing that the person you're talking to is just as geeky as you are and shares the same kind of interests makes it really easy to break the ice and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's what we do. Dragonfruit, check it out. Free on the ice, on the Apple Store and Android Store.
So it's for people looking for any kind of, you know, relationship, friendship, any kind of thing that can find a connection with in other geeks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's formulated primarily as a dating app, but we actually find that a lot of our users are just using it to kind of reach out within their own communities and see, you know, that there are other people like them who they can just kind of hang out with and meet.
That's great. So if one of our listeners wants to use Dragonfruit, how would they do that?
They would do that by either going on the web to dragonfruitapp.com, which is where the web version is hosted and where the links are hosted to the Apple iTunes store and to the Android Google Play store. That's what they call it these days. And you can download it for free and you can do everything on it for free, actually. It is a completely free thing. So check it out, yeah.
Wow, so totally free, no charges at all.
Not a thing. We haven't built a payment system. We will maybe one day, but for now, that we literally have no way to take your money.
Well, you are a gentleman and a proprietor, sir. of course. Do you have any interesting stories that you've picked up from your experiences working with this app?
Oh, man. I've been doing this for about a year and a half now, and I can't even express the amount of stuff that I've learned. Just like... being an entrepreneur is interesting enough, but like learning about the community of geeks has been really interesting and really inspiring, to be honest. I've seen so many good people with interesting jobs and interesting, you know, passions and just people being their own awesome selves that really kind of reinforces the initial idea that I had, which was just that, you know, geeks are brilliant people, and the only thing that's missing is a platform for them to find each other. I started going to conventions about 2 or 3 years ago, and I kept meeting people who were just fantastic. And I knew that the only thing that was missing, as I say, is something like Dragonfruit. So, you know, I was sitting around for weeks and months with some of my single geeky friends. We would sit around and play board games on a Friday night and we would talk about our lives. And it started to become apparent to them and to us that the dating app, the dating site landscape out there really wasn't built for people like us in any meaningful way. And so the, you know, we just kind of decided to go for it and to make it happen on our own.
You know, when I looked up on your site, the word that I kept thinking of was liberating. in a way, because with all the other dating sites, I'd have to imagine that if I were to make a profile today, I would have to downplay a lot of my nerdiness, the fact that I'm a huge Trekker. I know it's a Star Wars episode, but you guys know I'm a Trekker out there. I would have to downplay the fact that I have a library at home that has an Enterprise model in it. And try to focus on the other parts. But with Dragonfruit, that's encouraged. And you can be your full self, which is
absolutely
great.
One of our, you know, mottos, slogans, whatever, is fly your geek flag. We want people to go in and to be proud of who they are. Because philosophically, if you are hiding who you are on a traditional dating site or whatever, if you're holding all of that stuff back, there are only a couple of ways that it can go, really. Either it's going to come out sooner or later and someone's going to be disappointed. You know, somebody is going to be like, well, you're not who I thought I was, you know, who you thought you were. Or else you're going to find yourself hiding that part of yourself for potentially the rest of your life, which is only going to cause problems. I mean, that sucks. And considering how all culture, more all pop culture these days, more or less, is geek culture, it's a really great time to be a geek, and yet there's still this weird, pointless, false stigma that goes around. So we want to create a community where people feel comfortable enough being themselves and really embracing the things that they love and all of their passions and having the opportunity to share that with somebody else. The idea that a significant other has to replace a part of your life that you're passionate about. You know, you love sitting on the weekends and playing video games, but when you get a partner, you can't do that anymore. That seems ridiculous to me. So the hope is that people can find somebody to be with who will supplement that, who will make that experience, that passion, even more enjoyable because you have somebody to share it with.
And I have one more logistical question. We have listeners all over the world. Where is Dragon Fruit available?
Dragon Fruit is available everywhere. Everywhere and anywhere. You can go onto the store and you can download it and enjoy. We have users all over the world. It's
perfect.
Crazy. I mean, I didn't expect it at all.
So if you are listeners, I know we have listeners in Portugal, Italy, Ireland, UK, Canada, US. We've had one listener in the Maldives, probably on vacation from one of those other countries, I would imagine. But you can find somebody on Dragon Fruit. So, Ori, thank you for telling us about Dragon Fruit. We're going to put the link in the show notes so that people can go check it out straight from the show notes for the podcast. Matt, Ned, do you have any questions about Dragon Fruit before we move on to Star Wars?
Well, I think I have more of a comment, really.
Please.
And it's regarding the concept of the Dragon Fruit app. I think it really is a really great thing, especially the way Ori's been explaining it. Because, you know, I've been married for almost 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And I cannot imagine not having Rachel and I's interests overlap. I cannot imagine them not overlapping. Mm-hmm. Because what would you have to talk about or do? It's like, you know, right now I'm sitting next to about 8,000 Magic the Gathering cards. I am not joking. Next to my desk, because I've been in the process of resorting them, there's about 8,000 Magic cards sitting next to my desk.
Your desk is getting trampled?
Oh. Yes, my desk has trampled. And in fact. But part of why I have so many is because a lot, you know, I played the game with her. It's something we do together. We play video games together. And having someone to share that aspect of your life with is, I think, a really important thing, at least for me personally.
I absolutely agree.
It's such a major part of my life. I cannot imagine being in a romantic relationship with someone that I can't share that with and, yeah, let my geek flag fly with it. So, you know, for me, I think that this app is really a great thing for the community. So out there, if you're single and you're looking for somebody, let's face it, if you're listening to the show, you're a geek.
You're one of us.
You're one of us. Download this app because, you know, at worst, you make some new friends. At best, you find your person.
Well, what I have to say, Matt, I mean, thank you. That's very nice of you to say and everything. But I get some people saying, you know, why should a person box themselves into the only thing? You know, if I like one thing, why do I need to look for somebody who likes that specific thing? You know, kind of as a counter argument to what you're saying. And I certainly don't want to be advocating against myself here. So what I'll do is I'll turn it around and I'll say that even if you don't share the specific same geeky interest, just knowing that the person you're talking to or that you are dating understands the level of passion that you have for a thing, even if it isn't that same thing, goes a long way to creating the kind of understanding and intimacy that you want and expect from a romantic relationship. It doesn't have to be exactly the same thing. And in fact, I think that, you know, us as geeks, what do we love more than talking about the stuff we're into? If you have somebody to share that with without having the judgment, because you know that the person you're talking to is just as geeky as you are, being able to introduce a person to something that you love and share that and develop things together is incredibly rewarding and I think is a really great basis for an ongoing relationship.
Yeah, Ori, I think my wife and I are more of that model. She's not as geeky into the same things that I am, but she knows that I am and encourages it, and we talk about things, and she's geeky in other ways. So we're more of that model, but still, we've been married nearly 10 years, and it's supportive. So geek love, hashtag geek love, hashtag of the week.
I fully support this hashtag.
Ed, do you have any thoughts?
I kind of mirroring what Matt said. I mean, when I went to high school, I graduated in 2004, you know, and I'm a big geeky, nerdy guy. Nothing like this was available back then, and it would have been very nice to have access to something like this, to meet people with shared interests. And, you know, since I graduated, I've been lucky enough to get married and find somebody who shares quite a few of my interests. You know, I mean, we can sit down and watch Doctor Who or Attack on Titan or whatever. And it's just really nice to offer something like this. And I know a few of my single friends who should really take advantage of it.
Absolutely. So thank you, Ori, for letting us know about Dragon Fruit.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Sure, we're going to have some people who use this app as a result of this episode. So without further ado, we segue into our big nerdy question of the week. That's a new thing. Sorry, I'm trying it out for the first time. But anyway, it's a. I won't do it again. Our big nerdy question of the week, which is what relationship lessons can be learned from Star Wars? And we're going to take this one pretty free-flowing, and I'll let each of us in turns introduce relationships and the lesson that you want to learn from it. And it's not just romantic relationships. There's clearly a relationship between Han and Luke. There's a relationship between C-3PO and R2-D2. There's a relationship between Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon that aren't romantic, but still are relationships in a certain way. And
are you really sure about Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon?
Yeah, I was about to say, you're not really sure about that.
I mean, there was a bit of padding of the Padawan, if you know what I mean. They didn't have their consent, but they forced it. It was bad.
I was about to go somewhere with that.
But anyway, so Ed, why don't you kick us off with a particular Star Wars relationship and a lesson that you think we should learn?
Well, we can, you know, go back to the, Clone Wars era. We can talk about Padme and Anakin. What can that relationship teach us? Well, sometimes over-obsessing about something is not a good thing. That is very evident in, since Anakin was a child, he got a glimpse of Padme when she was, you know, still too young anyway herself, and then the creep factor going on through Attack of the Clones, where he's obsessing over her, pining over her, just some of the really stalker type things he says to and about her during that film are just unsettling. And then we know how it culminated and ended with her death by losing hope, but that's beside the point. The lessons to take from that is, don't obsess. Don't be like the stalker guy. Don't be a creeper.
Don't stand so close to me, to quote the great philosopher Sting. Matt, what's your thoughts on the creeper factor in Anakin and Padme?
Well, I think pretty much anything involving the Aiden Christensen interpretation of Anakin has a whole lot of creep factor. Like, I'm expecting his shuttle looks suspiciously like a panel van, but there were a lot of warning signs with that relationship, I felt like.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, and Ori, I want to ask your opinion on this. I think that maybe Anakin defined his identity a little bit too much in terms of Padme. Because he met her so young, he didn't have his own identity. His identity was being with Padme, and that was it. And I don't know if that's a healthy perspective in a relationship, to not have your own self grounded before you dive into this crazy relationship. What do you think?
I think that's a really good point, actually. There's definitely a codependence that's going on between Anakin and Padme. I think that part of the problem that arose there was that Anakin didn't really have the opportunity to develop his own, you know, personality, partly because, I mean, basically, this is a kid who went from being a child slave to going straight into the Jedi Academy and being trained by Obi-Wan. He didn't have an opportunity to grow in any way between those two phases of his life. And the only part where he was able to demonstrate any independence was in his pod racing days, and when he was being encouraged and nurtured by the young Padme in episode one. So he kind of latches onto that, and though he's growing in his power and in his capabilities, emotionally, he doesn't move on at all because he never has the opportunity to, which is kind of the point of, Jedi going into the academy younger than he was and being taught from an early age about suppressing emotion and things like that. Let's be honest. The Jedi Council was right in every material way about Anakin. So he kind of developed this unhealthy obsession, this codependence about her. But I also think that it's important to keep in mind that the character of Padme is it's a very different character between episode one and episodes two and three. Phantom Menace Padme was a total badass. She was the queen with her very, strong opinions, with her, she was kind of a feminist action hero. And by the end of Attack of the Clones, she was a kind of soppy foil female character who was only there to represent conflict for Anakin. And I think that another really important, lesson to take away from that is, kind of the weird, creepy emotional abuse that Anakin either knowingly or unwittingly piles upon her wears her down and changes fundamentally who she is. And I think that that's an interesting thing to look at.
I based what I was saying solely on the movies, but in all honesty, within the show Clone Wars, they actually do give very good instances of them having a somewhat more normal and somewhat more healthy relationship. But, I mean, that's them retconning and fixing it after the fact. During the movie, Anakin just came across way too overbearing. And, well, the fact that the Jedi were not allowed to pursue any kind of, physical or material attachments, that was part of it as well. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we know on the show by now, at least for the regular listeners, that I'm a bit of a fan of fan theories, and there is a major fan theory that I'm particularly fond of relating to the relationship between Anakin and Padme, and of course I always like the dark stuff. So,
of course,
but there's actually a fan theory that Anakin's power with the Force is actually beyond his own understanding. And while he's around Padme, he's unwittingly actually using the Force to slowly influence her opinion of him, which explains why she goes from being this strong, independent, powerful character to being just a hollow shell of herself by episode three.
Hmm.
I could prescribe to that theory.
Yeah, I don't think that's unreasonable at all.
No, it gives George Lucas an out instead of just being lazy with his writing of female characters. So
it gives Natalie Portman's acting an out too.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, be careful, Natalie Portman. Be careful.
She was phoning it
up. If we make too much critique her too much, she may hold a vendetta against us.
Nah, zing.
So just be careful. but yeah, another thing I think I see with Padme and Anakin is, Ori, you mentioned this with Anakin being with the Jedi Order. It's the age-old question of balancing relationship and career. And it's a little bit different because it's a Jedi career, but it's one of those things like Anakin's job is antithetical to having romantic attachments. I mean, the closest thing you can think of in our society would be a person in a seminary, a Catholic seminary, falling in love with somebody, and the problems that would ensue. And obviously, we're not suggesting Catholic seminarians use dragon fruit and find romantic relationships and act outside their faith. But Ori, do you have any tips for how geeks can balance the craziness of careers these days with their love interests?
I think that geeks probably fall victim to taking things a little too seriously more than, you know, other people necessarily. And it's just a kind of a thing to bear in mind. There are people who, you know, live for work, and there are people who work to live. And I think that, just always keeping in mind the idea that career isn't everything, even though it's probably, I mean, it is very important to a lot of people. And, you know, it's important to make sure that you're doing things to, you know, achieve what you want in life and to make sure that you're able to provide for yourself and your family, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, like, taking things a little bit too seriously and getting overly obsessed with what you're doing is unlikely to actually result in that, because you're going to get in too deep. Practical tips, I'm afraid I don't have much for you, but it's just sort of trying to slow down and appreciate the good things and make sure that you're focusing on the right things.
I mean, everyone finds their own balance, but I would think, Matt, would you back me up that Anakin and Padme were unable to do so?
Definitely. I think a big problem with the Anakin-Padme relationship is that in order for them to pursue that relationship, he had to violate one of the basic tenets of his position. And to an extent, she kind of did too. Because you got to think, you know, she's royalty, and there are certain expectations as to who you're going to partner with in those situations. So really, they're both kind of playing against type here. And I think the bigger issue in it for those two individuals is for Anakin, because he's gone from a position to, as Ori mentioned earlier, being a child slave whose only outlet or expression is through pod racing, to suddenly being, oh, and by the way, now you can throw stuff with your mind. Oh, and here's a sword made of energy. What could possibly go wrong? And here comes puberty.
And then not to mention the whole Messiah complex with them continuously calling him the Chosen One.
To his face.
Well, and to be fair, Padme is sort of the quasi-Messiah figure for Naboo. So that's an interesting mix right there. And that's another thing. I'm pretty sure the relationship is not made public, right?
No, it never was.
Everything is in secret because of her position on Naboo. You know, so another lesson perhaps is to be honest with yourself and others to the extent you can be. I mean, obviously completely honest with each other, but try to be as open about your relationship as you can. I know sometimes in society you can't, and it's a shame. But try, because, you know, that's another stressor on their relationship, is the fact they couldn't be honest and open with people around them and their closest confidant named Jar Jar Binks.
If only Jar Jar had known, he would have been able to save us all.
Well, I subscribe to the theory that Jar Jar actually had a crush on Padme himself. And you know, he wanted to unite the two peoples of Naboo in a power couple. The Bennifer, if you will, of Naboo. But it was rejected en masse. And of course, I'm kidding. There's no real fan theory on that. But if there were...
There is now.
There is now.
That's going to be a slash fic in like 2 hours. Oh, God. Just keep your eye on fanfiction.net. After this episode was like 2 hours. Somebody's going to have 10,000 words about it.
Jar Jar, what large ears you have.
Let's be realistic. Between the choice of Anakin or Jar Jar, which one is worse for Padme?
You know, stick with the guy who got her killed. There is such thing as a fate worse than death, and that fate is Jar Jar.
Rory, what were you saying on this?
I was just going to say that we've seen many times throughout all three movies there are various methods of shutting Jar Jar up. So, yes. You know, with liberal use of those methods, it might just work.
It might. It very well might. On our previous episode on Disney, we actually mentioned the possibility of Ursula taking Jar Jar's voice away. And that would ultimately make him much more palatable.
That would also make her a hero.
Which is what, that, yeah, we said
it
that
would
exactly.
Fully redeem her, it would fully redeem Ursula if she took away Jar Jar Binks' voice.
But then she would be using his voice.
That's true, she'd be using his voice.
It would be Ursula the Sea Witch. I mean, sorry, Jar Jar the Sea Witch, which is like...
Oh! Could you imagine him, kind of hell. Jar Jar singing Poor Unfortunate Souls?
Well, there is a favorite to Jar Jar.
He is a Disney property now, it could happen.
Kingdom Hearts 3. Booyah.
Good lord. That's the DLC no one asked for. So, let's move on from Padme and Anakin. There is obviously a big romantic relationship. I want to save that to the end, because that's the relationship that is the cornerstone of Star Wars, I think. So, let's
Luke
talk
and
about
Leia.
Some other... Yeah, exactly. So, we'll save the talking about them till the end. So, let's talk about some other relationships and some lessons we want to learn... we can learn from them. Matt, what would you like to propose?
Well, I would like to actually propose a relationship that generally doesn't get talked about very much. And it's from the original trilogy. And that is actually Leia and Luke.
Hmm.
And no, the lesson is not make sure he's not your brother before you make out with him. Though
that's kind of
an important one to have. The lesson I actually take... from the Luke-Leia relationship, especially throughout the trilogy as a whole, is that just because a relationship isn't what you think it is at first doesn't mean it won't be a good thing.
I love it. It
can actually wind up being better. Because...
It's so... Yes, brilliant. Sorry, go on. I'm interrupting you for no reason.
So... when they first meet, he's the simple farm boy who gets caught up in a war that's way above his pay grade. He's rescuing the princess, and, you know, she kisses him to make Han jealous in Empire. And there's a little bit of romantic to it, but you always know there's something else going on. And when it's revealed that they're siblings, everything makes so much sense, and they grow so much closer. And they really develop... this strong sibling relationship that, honestly, even a lot of real siblings don't have. And they have this connection, both as siblings and as Force sensitives, that they can literally reach out to each other through the ether, or the whatever atmosphere Bespin has.
I think it's called the Force. I could
yes,
be wrong.
The Schwartz. Wait, no.
Yes! No.
Lord Helmet.
No, that is brilliant, Matt. Ori, you said it yourself. What do you think about this?
I really like it. I think, yes, the power of their relationship is the thing that transcends all of the conflict and all of the bickering and all of the, you know, relatively petty things that are going on in the rest of it. I think a strong argument could be made that the bond between Luke and Leia is what the movies are really about. Basically, there are only two sets of characters who are able to sense each other across the ether, as you've said, and using the Force, and that's Luke and Darth Vader, and Luke and Leia. Except Darth Vader can feel Luke when he's nearby. You know, if he's on the other side of the moon, he can feel a disturbance in the Force. He can feel that there is somebody who is strong with the Force. Luke was able to feel Leia being in trouble all the way from Dagobah. Leia, who is entirely untrained in the ways of the Force, was able to feel Luke's pain because their connection is so strong. And I do think that that connection is very much informed by where their relationship began. You know, it never was a romantic relationship. Everything, as you say rightly, was meant to make Han jealous. And, you know, farm boy Luke may have been taken by surprise by, you know, the kiss that she gave him in Empire Strikes Back. But it never really was that. And they were developing very quietly and very slowly this kind of friendship and this mutual respect for one another that kind of it. I think that they may have always known in a subconscious way that their connection was deeper than just two people who happened to run into each other on a space station one day. So much so that when the truth came out, it wasn't really that much of a surprise. It made sense. Everything fell into place. And from that point onwards, and that just kind of made sense to everybody. And I think we see that as well in The Force Awakens, which isn't a film that we've discussed yet. excuse me. Where Leia not knowing where Luke is and if he is safe and if he is well and what is happening represents just how lost Luke truly is. And the loss of that relationship to Leia is so damaging that, you know, her relationship with Han falls apart, that her relationship with her son falls apart, that it's such an integral part of who she is, who she has become, that without him, nothing else really makes sense. So I'm 100% with you, Matt. I think that is one of the most important and meaningful relationships in the entire franchise.
Relationships evolve, yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the things that really seals that relationship for me, and I honestly, it in the grand scheme of the movies, it seems, because, you know, it's this great space opera, and in the grand scheme of things, it seems like this tiny moment, but I think it's so telling, and I'm a huge fan of character development. I love character development. And I think such a massive moment that gets overlooked so much is in Return of the Jedi, when Luke reveals to Leia, "You're my sister." She says, "Somehow I've always known." As I didn't know consciously, but somehow I knew. I expected this. And I think that's wildly telling about the relationship between those two as to just how intertwined they are, completely sans romance.
Yeah, great point. Ed, what do you think about the Luke and Leia evolution?
I agree with pretty much everybody's opinion on this. I mean, their relationship as friends and then later revealed as siblings grew to such a level and such depth. Like Ori was kind of saying in episode 7, it almost seemed that Leia was far more distraught over, you know, Luke's whereabouts and, you know, what was going on with him than she was almost with what was going on with her son and, you know, his turn to the dark side. I know it's, you know, speculation there, but I mean, even in the supplementary materials like the old canon and the new canon novels, Luke was always, you know, kind of her rock, you know, the one she could call on, the one she could rely on, trust, and same thing with Leia. I mean, seeking out each other's counsel and helping each other out, it was a very, very deep relationship. And I'm very interested to see where they go with it in episode 8, considering the events of episode 7.
Absolutely. And I actually, the next relationship I wanted to introduce was from The Force Awakens, Ori. I wanted to bring up the relationship between Finn and Rey. And we don't know exactly what it is yet. But I think the lesson we can say, even no matter if it's friendship or romantic, the lesson that we can draw from it is a relationship can give you a second chance at life.
I hope it goes full bromance, honestly.
I do, Rey, too.
Either way, though, the two of them have motivated each other to do something extraordinary. You know, Finn has transformed in the span of one episode from a reluctant stormtrooper to an out-and-out courageous warrior. Because he was fighting for Rey. And Rey's friendship with Finn has opened up her walls a little bit and has allowed her to look more into the Force because she was worried about him. And look at what happens in the lightsaber battle when when Finn goes down is when Rey all of a sudden goes total badass on Kylo Ren. So even if it turns out to just be a friendship, which is fine, and I've seen rumors that Finn and Poe are going to be a romantic relationship, which remains to be seen if Star Wars will go in that direction. But no matter the case, the two of them have helped each other get a second chance, a redefinition at life. And I really think that's an important lesson. You know, with the right person, if your life seems like it's on a downward track or seems like you're in a rut, with finding the right person, be it relationship, romantic, or a friendship, can change your whole outlook, can give you a new perspective, can give you new optimism, really a new hope, to use a Star Wars pun. And I'm not saying redefine yourself. Don't redefine yourself with the relationship, but it can allow you to change your perspective. And your new perspective can be much more healthy and much more optimistic about, you know, your where you're going. So it's a good thing, in my opinion. Ori, what do you think about this?
I mean, I think you're right. I think that finding a new motivation in a person, realizing, oh, this is what I'm fighting for, can be very, very valuable to a person who may have lost sight of that necessarily. And I think that, well, just from a purely sort of film theory perspective, I doubt that they are going to make Rey to do to Rey what they did to Padme in the writing, and to kind of dissolve her character in that way. And I think that if there is a love story there, which I think there probably is, this is Disney after all, if there is a love story there, it's going to be one that is a lot more similar to Han and Leia, and I know we're getting there, and I'm not going to go into it right now, but I think it's going to be a hard fought one, and I think it's going to be a much more equal one, especially since she is clearly the one with the force power, you know, not the relationship power, but the power is in her, and it's going to be up to Finn to support that and to nurture that so that she can realize her full potential. This is a 21st century Star Wars. This is not from the early 2000s where things were kind of, I mean, it's weird that we had this dip between the badassery of Leia in the 70s and 80s and then the complete wash of a character that Padme ended up being. When we were in a more progressive time, but now I really doubt that that the writers of the next couple of films are going to go down that route. In terms of the relationship, I think the best thing we can see, the best thing that we can learn there, is indeed the idea that people can support one another in whatever form that takes, and it doesn't need to be clear, because obviously Finn cares about Rey, and he will go and he will fight and he will risk everything for her. But that doesn't necessarily mean a romantic relationship. In my opinion, it probably does mean that, but it doesn't have to. No. And just having something, someone to fight for, as he said, can completely change a person's life.
And Ed, I know that you are actually more on the Poe and Finn bandwagon. So do you want to chime in a little bit on what that relationship could mean?
Well, okay. I'm not going to get into a debate on, you know, relationships or whatever, because this is just my opinions, okay? Everybody's entitled to their own. All right. Disney, within the new canon of books, has introduced quite a few gay and lesbian characters. I do not think it is outside the realm of possibility to see Poe and Finn become an item. I'm not opposed to that, because as Ori was just saying, this is, you know, it's 2016. There are multiple different kinds of relationships any person could have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do I think there would be blowback from it if Disney did that? Yes, I do, because not everybody agrees with that, you know, lifestyle, but I think it would be a very ballsy stand to take, and a very, very interesting direction to take the story. It kind of harkens back to Star Trek to me. Star Trek, in its core, has all been about tolerance, you know,
yeah,
about different species and different ideas, different mentalities, and I haven't seen near as much Star Trek as you, but that's what it boils down to.
It does, although to be honest, Star Trek did not have an LGBT relationship on screen for a main character until Star Trek Beyond this year, where right, they acknowledged that Sulu was LGBT. But even then, George Takei didn't want that to happen because Gene Roddenberry did not conceive the character that way.
And I kind of agree with that, but, you know.
So it's kind of a retcon for that, to kind of honor George Takei, even though he was against it. So I see your point. And they actually were going to try with the character named Lieutenant Hawk in Star Trek First Contact. He was one of the first ones assimilated. They had, in the novel, it's clear that he's LGBT, and his husband is on board the Enterprise, but they had to cut it for time in the movie. Who knows what would have happened if they would have left it in, but it is what it is. Now, in the sense of the Star Wars question with The Force Awakens, I think they could go both routes. I agree with Ori that with film theory and the way they've constructed it, it seems like they're heading down the road toward Finn and Rey. However, if they're trying to match the parallels of the original trilogy, then I would say that it's more likely to be Finn and Poe, because Rey is the Luke Skywalker character, and Finn is the Leia character, and Poe is the Han character. So if you want to mirror the relationships of the original trilogy, that's Finn and Rey are destined for a bromance of a very close sort, almost like family. Because Finn has no family, at least nothing we know of yet, although I'm hoping for Lando as his father. I am. But we don't know yet. So I could see both routes, depending on which way Episode 7 goes. Maybe we'll get a hint in Rogue One, although I think probably not.
No.
I'm just hoping for more Billy Williams in general.
Well, we did get confirmation that Donald Glover is going to be playing Lando Calrissian in the Han Solo prequel.
Right.
I think that's a great casting choice. I think it's going to be fantastic.
I agree. I'm hoping that they can get some other actors from Community to show up in the film just because.
So here's my short thought about the Finn and Poe pairing. I think it would be amazing. I do not think it is going to happen. I would absolutely love for it to happen, and God knows there will be plenty of fan fiction that will
there
be spawned
about,
around that relation. Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's why we have the internet.
Yeah, but what with there being so many other films in the works within the Star Wars universe, we're dealing with a whole different, with a whole, you know, huge franchise between Rogue One and between, you know, the Han prequel and so many other films that are currently working their ways through the pipelines. They have Disney and the rest of the production team have plenty of opportunities to be, you know, blazing their trails in the way that probably a lot of the writers really desperately want to do. I don't think that they are going to be brave enough to take that risk with the core franchise.
If anything, I wouldn't be surprised if the protagonist of Rogue One, Jyn?
Jyn Erso.
Jyn Erso. I would be less surprised if she turned out to be LGBT, because I think you're right that they're less likely to do it in the core films than in one of the spinoffs. And that way she'd be the main character as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case. But who knows?
And there was a lot of backlash, and I'm not one that prescribed to this. There was a lot of backlash for casting John Boyega as a stormtrooper because people were not intelligent enough to understand within Star Wars that the clones were phased out, you know, decades ago. Mm-hmm. They're not all the same person. There were people that were still believing that it's supposed to be, you know, the same guy in that outfit, and they were, you know, ticked off that John Boyega was cast as a stormtrooper. Why wouldn't he? It's an enlisted army. Well, the stormtroopers were. They were kind of captured as children, but that's beside the point.
Yeah,
so yeah,
they were
They were with no intent to return. So Ori's probably right. They don't have the guts to do it with the main franchise.
I've heard one theory that Captain Phasma is supposed to be LGBT, but that would seem a rather big stretch considering that character is... That
useless?
Character is defined entirely by her military experience, right? So, yes, I weep for Phasma as Ori.
I would honestly more expect Captain Phasma to actually turn out to be asexual, which is honestly a group that is extremely underrepresented in cinema, on the exceptionally rare occasion that they're represented at all.
It's usually represented inaccurately, more of as a joke than anything else. So, yes. Ed, I think you've told me before that you think that Gwendolyn Christie was completely wasted in that role.
Completely. Yeah, go ahead, Matt. What were you going to say?
She's absolutely brilliant in Game of Thrones. She's a fantastic actress. Mm-hmm. She has an incredible range. She really does. And she can swing a sword like nobody's business, which is kind of awesome.
Yes, she can. And yet the bear, and the maiden fair. About Gwendolyn, what irritated me, and because I expected so much more from that character, when the merchandise started pumping out like last October for, you know, episode 7, the first action figure that I bought was Captain Phasma, because I was like, there's no way this is not going to be awesome. I love Gwendolyn Christie. They're going to use her right. And then I bought Kylo Ren after that. Much to my dismay, Gwendolyn Christie ended up in a trash compactor, having not done anything for the entirety of the film.
Yeah, I agree. So we will move on from speculation and back to our topic. I know that, Matt, you have one more. Ed, do you have another one before we get to the big one?
Yeah, I've got one more I could talk about.
And Uri, would you like to introduce one? I know we have it's your turn in the queue, so
I'll let you guys go. If I think of something,
Okay. So I'll go. We'll do Ed and Matt, and then we'll introduce the big kahuna, if you will. So, Ed, what's your next relationship?
Well, I think we really should talk about Luke and Anakin / Vader. That's a good one to discuss, because at its core, it really showed how, you know, family or your children can save you from complete and utter darkness at the end of it, because that's what it was. Luke is what brought him back from the, you know, he wasn't even at the brink, he was over the edge. And it was Luke that brought him back and gave him a little bit of peace before he died. And I think that was, you know, a really, really emotional, really, really deep scene. And when he was laying there and Luke said to him, you know, don't give up, I've got to get you out of here, I've got to save you. And then, you know, Anakin just looks at him and says, you already have. And that was just a really emotional scene.
Yeah, I would agree. I think I don't have any experience as a parent. So I, unlike with these other relationships, you know, friend, romantic, I can't speak from personal experience here. But I would definitely agree that children can be your redemption. Of course, in some cases, they can be your downfall, I would imagine. But in this case, it's a redemption for sure, which is maybe the downfall in the sense of Kylo Ren with Han.
Too soon!
Yeah. but, yeah, children can be a redemption and can bring you back. And there's so many other shows that have shown something similar to this, or other stories that have shown where children can be a positive influence on the parent and vice versa. I think it goes without saying that it's definitely an important part of Star Wars canon. And especially in so many Disney films, you don't have a father figure. And of course, Star Wars wasn't originally a Disney franchise, but it is now. And it kind of stands out for that reason of having a father that's redeemed. In a lot of Disney films, the father or the mother's already dead or is just incompetent. It's an interesting twist on the classic trope of parenthood. So, Ori, what are your thoughts on Vader and Luke?
I think that in general, there's a dearth of parental child dynamics in almost any popular culture that I can think of. Either the kids are pretty much inconsequential to the parent around whom the media is centered. Or else the child, or the, you know, usually grown kid is, you know, the parent is absent or inconsequential to them. It's rare that you get a depiction of a real parental dynamic that's anything more than like a side point. If you think about so many shows and movies and things, the parent is often either, especially fathers, I think fathers get kind of a bum rap in popular culture. I don't know why that is. You know, they're going to be either absentee, or they're going to be con men, or they're going to be, you know, they're always something that is for the child to overcome. And I think that Luke, despite having never met his father, and despite, you know, in that first instance where he refuses to acknowledge it, you know, no, it can't be true, somehow finds love and respect for a man he doesn't really know in any way, but has faith that if he were good and if Obi-Wan respected him in the way that he did, then there must be some good left in him. That trust and that instinct, obviously reinforced by the feelings that you get from being a Force user, I think speaks volumes about the inherent connections that you have with between parents and children. And I think that there is a lot of that is down to Obi-Wan. You remember, of course, that Obi-Wan never mentioned to Luke that Vader was his father, and only ever spoke about Anakin as a good man. And for Obi-Wan, there was a clear separation between Anakin and Vader. But for Luke, they were one and the same, and there was never this idea of a discontinuity that one man died and another was born on that day on Mustafar, that instead there was the possibility of redemption. And that, I think, shows a lot of faith in a person who he had no very good reason to believe in. So at the same time, it shows about the relationship between Luke and Vader, but also in the relationship between Luke and Obi-Wan, and the level of trust that he had in his instincts of characterizing Anakin as a fundamentally good man.
Great points. I think that, it's one of those relationships that's definitive for the franchise. Star Wars would not be Star Wars without the Luke-Vader relationship. I think if you ask George Lucas, he might say it's the most important relationship of the entire franchise, because he created Anakin to have the fall, and then Luke would be the redemption. So I think he would pick Padme and Anakin as the catalyst of the fall, and then Anakin and Luke as the redemption, as the two most important relationships in the franchise. I could be wrong, but that's my thought. In the interest of time, we're going to have to move on to Matt's second-to-last pick. Matt, what relationship would you like to introduce?
Well, I would actually really like to introduce the relationship of Han Solo and Chewbacca.
Oh, nice.
They were a bromance before bromance was a thing. The thing is, with the Han and Chewbacca relationship, it proves, like we were talking about earlier with Episode 7, where we're wanting to see a deep-seated friendship without it being a romantic relationship. I think we already had that with Han and Chewie. I mean, yes, there's the Wookiee life debt. You know, he pledged his life to Han for saving his. But it goes deeper than that. You don't become willing to die for someone if you don't genuinely care about that individual. You just don't.
Yeah, I think that with Han and Chewie, you know, true friendship can come from anywhere. I mean, look where it, like you said, it started as a Wookiee life debt, and they became the best of friends. You know, it always kind of confused me. I'm not saying Lando is a bad character. I love Lando. But it confused me to introduce Lando as Han's best friend, in a way, when Chewie already filled that role.
I think with the Han and Chewie relationship, for them, I think the relationship is too deep to be called best friends. Because there's a saying that people repeatedly misuse, and that is, blood is thicker than water. And the actual phrase is, the full version of it is, the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb. Meaning that the family you choose is more important to you than the family you were born into. If you marry someone and you're pledging your life to them, you're consciously choosing to make that person part of your family. And while a marriage and a Wookiee life debt aren't exactly the same, Chewbacca is still pledging the rest of his life to loyally serve Han and protect him and stay by his side. And that's a big part of the commitment of marriage, at least to me.
Absolutely. Ed, what are your thoughts on Han and Chewie?
You know, it's essentially what Matt was saying. They're not friends. They're, in essence, family. And, you know, in the expanded universe, I mean, even at times where Han is not, you know, physically, you know, with Leia, he's always with Chewbacca. Always. They have each other's backs in any circumstance. And, you know, watching Episode 7, and we can talk about how the build-up to Han's death was, you know, not handled very well, where it was easily, you know, obvious what was going to happen. Chewbacca's reaction after Han was shot was fantastic and also heart-wrenching to see, because, I mean, they've been through it all together and had survived any number of any things that they should not have been able to survive, and Chewbacca's rage and anguish was just, it was something to watch. It was incredible. Yeah. And then he took that shot at Kylo Ren and hit him in the side. But, you know, just a fantastic relationship. Star Wars has great relationships throughout, and we're not going to have time to talk about it. You know, R2 and 3PO is a fantastic relationship.
Yeah, I love that one.
I smell a part two.
I do, because I could talk about I could talk about those two for a freaking hour just themselves.
Yeah.
But Han and Chewie are probably the... Han and Chewie is probably the quintessential friendship within the franchise.
I agree.
Absolutely.
Rory, what do you think about Han and Chewie?
Just one thing. Chewie wouldn't have pulled that crap on Sky City.
No. yeah, I agree. And one thing I do want to add here, and it's purely speculative, but I do want to see what they do with the Chewie character in Episode 8.
Oh, Rey is going to be surrogate Han. They're going to be palling up from here on out, I think.
Is that how it's going to go?
I think that's what's going to happen. So. And I'm completely
fine with
that.
Does Rey have
the
Falcon now?
Yes, she does.
Okay.
What I want to see is an entirely separate film in the Star Wars universe, as directed by Quentin Tarantino, called Chewie Unchained, and it'll just be a revenge fantasy. It'll be amazing.
That's a hashtag. That's our hashtag for the week. Hashtag Chewie Unchained.
I would pay like actual real money to see that.
I'm a Tarantino fan, so that would be amazing. But he's got to do it in the next two movies because he said he's retiring after his 10th.
Okay, I'm picturing Chewie in the style of Reservoir Dogs, cutting off people's ears and dancing about, singing in Kashyyyk, which is just odd. But anyway.
Well, he'd probably just be ripping off their arms rather than their ears, because, you know.
It is a Star Wars trope to lose an arm.
Yes. As an aside, one of my grandmother's cats was named Chewbacca after the character because he was so hairy.
It would be weird if he wasn't named after the character. Like, that would be just a crazy coincidence.
Yes, it would be odd. It would be odd to have a cat named Chewie that wasn't named after a Star Wars character.
No. I'm pretty sure it's not from Star Wars.
What do you call him, Chewie? Well, he really likes to eat nougat.
As a quick aside, you know, Anakin in his second movie, he lost a limb, and in Luke's second movie, he lost a limb. I wonder what's going to happen to Rey in her second movie.
Well, it's going to be a mix. Her hair's going to change like Leia's did every other scene in Star Wars, and then she's going to lose a foot, just to be different.
Mm-hmm.
Anakin lost a foot.
But that was at the end. That wasn't in the second movie.
Fair.
But then she'll take one of 3PO's feet and put it on her own, making her the bionic force user.
I'm fine with it.
Because he does know about human-cyborg relations.
Oh my.
If you know what I mean.
I do believe we have one last one we cannot not address.
So, Ori, you haven't introduced one yet. We leave this. We're all going to chime in, of course. But Ori, as our relationship expert, what lessons can be drawn from the relationship of Han Solo and Princess Leia Organa?
Where to begin? Obviously, it is a wonderful love story. It's, you know, the two characters who find one another and try as they might, they resist, you know, they try to resist as much as possible, but in the end, they can't deny that they have feelings for one another. And I think that, in particular, the moment that stands out for me, or rather the sequence of events that stands out for me, is the transition between the end of Empire Strikes Back and the beginning of Jedi, where Leia, you know, when Han gets frozen in the carbonite and Leia dedicates herself to rescuing him. I think that as a love story, it's a lovely one, but there are also a whole bunch of things that you can say about it that aren't entirely kosher. So you need to approach it with caution. Initially Han's, attitude towards Leia is fairly misogynistic, and there's a lot of kind of unwanted attention that he piles on her, and we can't ignore the fact that it would be a very different story and we would be treating that behavior very differently if in the end they didn't end up together, if there was no love story there, but instead it was just straight up harassment. But luckily, we get to look at it through rose-tinted glasses, and we can say that, you know, it was meant to be, and it was one of these, you know, grand sweeping love stories, and that he rescues her and she rescues him, and they find, you know, equal footing and a partnership together, notwithstanding the fact that in the end it didn't work out. You know, episode 7, I think we can probably leave to one side for a moment.
Agreed.
I think that another thing that is often more overlooked is the risks that Leia takes in rescuing Han rather than, you know, leading the rebellion, is really very damaging. She could have been doing her duty, and instead she chooses to go after the man she loves and puts a lot on the line for the sake of this one guy. She goes in, she tries to rescue him, she gets captured by Jabba the Hutt, who we know is a mercenary and a gangster who would have no problem whatsoever selling her back to the Empire if only he, you know, wasn't so self-indulgent. So considering what was at stake, that was incredibly irresponsible of her. And we treat that as a sign of love and a sign of passion. And you know what? I think that that's a good lesson to take as well. Like, love makes you do stupid things.
Amen.
And we like that, and we love that. And that's the thing that we forgive very easily, because it's the kind of thing that we can all relate to. So, probably the biggest sort of lesson to be taking is that love is not pragmatic in any way. That's my take.
That's a great take. Matt, what are your thoughts on Ori, what Ori said, and what would you like to add?
Well, one of the things I'd like to address, actually, from what Ori said, is the treatment of Leia by Han throughout the films. I am a huge proponent of considering the hero's journey, the redemption of Han Solo, as a big part of the original trilogy, at least for me. It's a big thing for me, because at the beginning of A New Hope, he's kind of an anti-hero. So him treating Leia poorly is expected. You know, he's not a nice guy, but showing the evolution of his treatment of Leia, and as he begins to treat Leia better, he begins to make better choices as well. He starts doing the right thing instead of just doing the profitable thing, because in A New Hope, he has the opportunity to walk away from it all. They give him the money, they put it on the ship, and he leaves. He had no incentive whatsoever to come back, and he flies the Millennium Falcon into the Death Star trench.
And that's actually
goes after Darth Vader himself.
And I believe that's the example you use to justify why Solo would be worthy of Thor's hammer in recent episode. So, yeah, precisely. And then also the example on Hoth when he goes back.
Yeah, it continues to evolve on Hoth. And then I would argue that the last bit of him being kind of the lovable scamp, the last bit you see of that is in the moment where he's about to be frozen in carbonite. And Leia says, "I love you." In the original script, he was supposed to yell, "I love you too." Harrison Ford ad-libbed, "I know." And I think that was one of the most brilliant moments in the trilogy, because when he comes out of that carbonite, he's a better man than when he went in, because Leia rescued him and he recognizes that she didn't have to. And I think that's the final moment where he truly becomes the hero.
I agree. A quick poll, though. Which is the better ad-lib Harrison Ford moment? The I know an Empire, or the shooting the goon in Raiders of the Lost Ark?
I know.
Oh, don't torture me with that. Oh! I gotta give it to Empire, because The Empire Strikes Back is my second favorite movie of all time.
What's
and
the first?
We're not going to get into my favorite movie of all time, because that will eventually be a big nerdy recommendation.
Yes, I know what it is, but I'm not going to say it.
But, yeah, the thing is, love can completely change you as a person. And yes, it can definitely make you a better individual. It can... Acting on love and for love, you can do things that for any other reason you would not be physically capable of doing. There have been time and time again stories and even security camera footage of women picking up the front end of a car because it rolled over a child. Love can make you do crazy things. It can make you do stupid things, but it can also turn you into a borderline superhero.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, Uri, you told me before we started taping, and I think the lesson is clear here, love can make you a better person. And I think Absolutely. That shows here. Ed, what are your thoughts on Han and Leia?
This kind of goes for a lot of the relationships in the original trilogy, is that, you know, just meeting someone by happenstance can change your life forever and make you a better person and just bring you around to your full realization of who you are. I mean, it happened with Luke because he met Obi-Wan and so on. It happened for Han because he met Leia and so on. They had such a great relationship. One of the novels I read recently was called Bloodline by Claudia Gray, and it takes place a couple of years before Episode 7 happens, and they're still physically together, and, you know, Ben Solo hasn't turned to the dark side, and, you know, she's still an acting senator, and he can't physically be there because he's hosting some kind of it's not pod racing, but for all intents and purposes, it's ship racing. And they do several scenes where he's calling in to check up on her, and they have, you know, genuine care between them. It's really great, great romance, you know, in a nerd setting or any setting, really.
Yeah, it's one of those relationships that it defines not only the franchise, but I think, you know, one of the things with love stories is how many couples try to think of themselves as, oh, we're just like Han and Leia, or just like the... I think a lot of people would be like, yeah, if we're like Han and Leia, we're doing pretty good. Of course, until The Force Awakens, and that kind of changed things. It's a classic love story. It's just as classic a Hollywood love story as, you know, the story of Casablanca or Romeo and Juliet. It's the same kind of classic story. It just so happens to be in a nerdy franchise. Doesn't delegitimize it at all. In fact, it, you know, as Dragonfruit has shown us, if nothing else, geeks can let their geek flag fly and still
nice
have
plug.
True romance. So, absolutely. So I think that the Han and Leia relationship, I mean, you guys have hit it all the important salient points of the relationship. It really did sadden me to learn in The Force Awakens that they weren't together as a couple anymore. I recognize why, because of realism, but in my heart, I'm an optimist and a romantic, and my all-time favorite relationship in any franchise, it's not really nerdy per se, but it's Niles and Daphne from Frasier. Like, that's my all-time biggest couple. Like, I was so into them finally getting together. If you were to show me a special now where Niles and Daphne weren't together, I would be crushed. So, it's depressing. In some ways, it was more depressing that they weren't together than that Kylo Ren was their son. In my opinion, but that's just because of who I am. But I still think that true love wins. And I should also point out, as maybe a final lesson, even if it doesn't work out in the end, it doesn't mean that your relationship wasn't important. It doesn't mean that it wasn't a good thing. It doesn't mean that it wasn't love. Sometimes it just doesn't work. But it doesn't delegitimize the relationship at all. It just, things happen sometimes. Relationships evolve, as with Luke and Leia. Thank God they didn't go in that direction.
Mm.
But so, clearly, I think that's important.
What I think you're trying to say, Josh, is that it might have been better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all?
Precisely.
Oh, the cliche, it hurts.
I know. Precisely. But we are living through a very cynical time in media. The best, you know, all of the shows and the films that get all of the critical acclaim and everything are the ones that hurt us the most. The ones that promise so much and then just, you know, kill off the best character stop a relationship in their tracks. Absolutely. This is what is driving, you know, cutting edge media and everything. So the fact that they gave us the tragedy of Leia and Han having split up, but just the hint of possibility that it would be okay and then snatch it away from us at the last minute. I think that speaks a little bit to the sort of the zeitgeist right now.
I agree. I also watch Once Upon a Time pretty regularly, and they're doing the same thing with so many relationships, you know, Rumpelstiltskin and Belle apart again, and then Captain Hook is about to, Emma thinks she's going to die, and then there's these other, Robin Hood died, and so Regina lost her true love. So if you're, it's another one of those, to suffice it to say, another fantasy or sci-fi show or work or franchise where they're going with tragedy as the zeitgeist instead of with optimism, even though the producers of that show say it's about hope.
Well,
they
say
that hope is their defining characteristic. And it's not there. So,
yeah, if the Batman films get any darker, Bruce Wayne's just going to sit in the back corner of the Batcave rocking back and forth mumbling to himself.
Although, you don't to think be fair, with DC Comics, I know it's a bit of an aside, but can we all agree people need to stop saying that their relationship is like Joker and Harley Quinn?
Oh, yes.
Joker is an abusive man!
Hold on. I've got to weigh in here because I'm a huge Batman fan. These children only know what they see in the new movie. They didn't watch the old cartoons. They didn't read the comics. That is an incredibly abusive relationship. If you want that relationship, good luck to you.
It's not healthy. It is not healthy. Joker is insane. Harley Quinn suffers Stockholm syndrome. This side, the worst case I've seen this side of Belle. It's horrible. Yep. This is not the relationship you want to use as your model.
Nope.
Please take Han and Leia. Don't take Harley Quinn and Joker. Don't go on Halloween as an engaged couple to be Harley Quinn and Joker. You are setting yourself up for failure. I'm sure the same couple is the one using Every Breath You Take as your wedding song, not realizing it's a stalker song. Good Lord, but they call me naive and there's a problem.
To be fair, I used a Sting song for my wedding.
Sting is okay. Every Breath You Take is not.
I used Fields of Gold. So
beautiful song.
That's fine.
That's better than White Wedding.
Oh yes.
One thing I would like to say on a serious note.
Yes.
And I realize I'm usually the comic relief here, but I have seen a lot of people in actual relationships similar to the original relationship between Joker and Harley Quinn. It never ends well.
No.
And,
you know, there are a lot of women on the receiving end of abusive relationships, and there's never a justification for it.
Absolutely not. You know, so I'm only making light of the relationships where people don't realize that they're looking, they think it's the ideal relationship, and it's not. If it's truly you're in a relationship that's like that, I know that's a bad situation, and I encourage you to please get help. If you know you're not going to listen to a podcast about anything, but yeah, I agree with Matt entirely that, you know, we make fun of the people who don't realize that the model they've chosen is probably not a good one. You know, that's like saying, hey, you know, I think we should elect somebody like Palpatine as president. Oh, wait.
Oh, God, too soon.
The Harley and Joker thing is basically like people just not realizing when they say that they're just like Romeo and Juliet. That Romeo and Juliet were a couple of dumb kids who knew each other for 3 days and then died.
And then killed a lot of people in the process.
Six people died because of a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old are just discovering hormones. Yeah, that's a great example.
Oh, Billy Shakespeare. They don't write him that way anymore, I tell you. No,
And Mercutio, which everything he said was basically a penis joke.
Pretty much.
I mean, here is my fiddlestick. Come on.
Get thee to a nunnery. Hey.
That's what she said.
Exactly. Oh, man. But see, I guess that means our last lesson is your love should be expressed in iambic pentameter.
It always works for me.
Seems legit.
It's too legit to quit.
Hey. Oh, my.
So do you have any wrap-up thoughts on a quick summation of why we can learn some lessons from Star Wars? I think we'll come back to it later. But, Ed, do you want to give us a wrap-up thought?
I think one of the big things to take from it is that family and friends that are equivalent to family can have such a positive influence on your life. You know, and then the counter to that is obsession can be a terrible thing, you know, so don't over obsess and then, you know, try to get along with everybody and, you know, keep your family and friends close.
Obsession can also be a strong fragrance from Calvin Klein.
It could. Christmas is coming.
It is.
Christmas is coming.
Matt, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, I think something that we've seen as running throughout this episode is that love comes in more than just one form, more than just romantic love. There is the love of a lover, and there is the love of a friend, and there is the love of family. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, if we would focus more on finding new ways to express love for everyone else, we could stop being dicks to each other. Maybe just for a while. Even an hour would be good.
So maybe the Star Wars lesson that trumps all the other lessons is, don't be a dick.
Well, that's just Whedon's law.
Mm-hmm. Kylo Ren needs to start taking notes.
Mm-hmm. I know, right?
A little bit late for him. But Ori, would you like to have any final thoughts on what we can learn from Star Wars?
Definitely. I think that what Matt said is very close to what I was going to say, in that the overarching theme of Star Wars is, and so many other films, books, etc., is, you know, the struggle between good and evil. But really, it's about individuals choosing to either be good to one another or be terrible to one another. And in Star Wars, we see the you know, most extreme consequence of that, in that just because some farm boy and, you know, some smuggler and etc., all of the other characters come together and decide to be good to one another, to care enough to come to their aid when they need it, and to give them the company, the companionship, and the friendship that they need at the right time, is what eventually triumphs over this massive engine of evil that is the Empire. And
we see very stark contrasts between the relationship of Anakin and Padme and the relationship between all the rest, that simply the act of being good to one another can change the universe.
I agree. I think I can sum it up in, you know, very pithily, an unhealthy relationship can cause ruination. A healthy relationship can redeem everyone. That's Star Wars. That's what happened. So that is our show. We do have one bit of business to take care of, but before I do, I want to thank Ed, as always.
You much, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Matt. And thank you, Ori. Ed, Matt, we all thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for being a part of our world for this episode. We truly appreciate it. We hope that we can talk to you again very soon. And we have one more piece of business, Ori. Always on the end of B&Q, we have to rectify the greatest wrong in the history of nerddom. We have to kill Jar Jar Binks. Matt, please kill off Jar Jar Binks.
Well, Josh, today Jar Jar Binks died a rather thematic death. You see, his heart was absolutely crushed, along with the rest of his body, when he was rejected and then compacted on the detention level.
Bravo. Bravo.
Well done. And with Jar Jar's crushed spirit and sphincter, we leave you this week. Thank you so much. And remember this fact, ladies and gentlemen. If you treat your relationship like Anakin and Padme, you're looking for love in all Duran places. For Ed, Matt, and for Ori, this is Josh signing off for Big Nerdy Questions.